is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes up short again and again, because there's no effort without error or shortcoming. But who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who, at the best, knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who, at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who knew neither victory nor defeat. Oh, man. When I read those words, I just want to bull rush a bear. It's a pretty inspiring speech. And as I listened to Ashley last week talk about getting off the sidelines, getting out of the box seats, and getting into the arena, and I was inspired. Let's go. Let's get in the game. You with me? But it's easier to get in the game, isn't it, than stay in the game. When the lineman comes through without being touched, and you take a 250-pound barbell right to the face. When you get bloodied and you get abandoned and you get left behind, can you stay in the game then? So I don't want to talk about getting in the arena. We've talked about that. I want to ask, how do you stay in the arena? When things get tough, when friends get rare, when you feel like you're how do you stay in the arena when it's difficult to fight for one more breath? That is what I want to talk about. But first, it's time for an irrelevant story. Last week, my wife and I were in Atlanta with our grandkids, and I'm playing with my 10-year-old grandson this frisbee disc golf. And in the middle of the game, I don't know where this came from, he said, "Papa," that's me, "do you like Atlanta better or Phoenix better?" There's no question. I like Phoenix better. And I said, I prefer Phoenix. And he said, with no apparent plan in place, "Yeah, I think I'm going to come live with you and Nani because I like being hot." This week might not be the right week to field test that theory. And some of you know, like you've been transplanted from another place here and you show up and it's like, what is happening? I have a message to you from God. This is why you don't want to go to hell. I do love Phoenix. Heat aside, I love this city. I love this state. I love the food. I love the coffee shops. I love the copper, the cactus, the climate, all of it. I'm gonna be buried in the desert. But we do have a problem here in the desert. And our problem is not an insignificant problem. The state of Arizona ranks 47th out of 50 states in something that it impacts your health, it impacts your mental health, it impacts your entire being. We rank 47 out of 50 states in what is called social capital. Now, all that means is your social capital are the strength of your relationships, your family, your friends, your coworkers. Your inner circle has a lot to do not only with your happiness, but with your health. Physicians have tracked that those who feel isolated are in a constant state of stress. Because of that constant state of stress, you are more likely for cardiac failure and cardiac issues. Your ability to resist diseases or infections is lowered. Your inflammation raises. In fact, it impacts you so much. Surgeon General said that isolation has as much potential impact on the longevity of your life as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. That's a big deal. And we need to deal with it here in Arizona because a lot of people move from out of state. We have a lot of transient people. People don't know this. We have a huge refugee population from California. You're welcome. glad you're here. Because of a transient society that we have in our state, we have a big problem. And CCV has a big solution. We are as good at groups as our state is bad at isolation. And that's why we keep promoting groups. This is nothing new. Like, we didn't invent this out of the playbook. If you go back to the very first church and read the description of it, it says, day after day in the temple courts, that was large gatherings, that's for inspiration, and from house to house, that's small gatherings for transformation. They never stopped teaching and proclaiming the good news of Jesus of Nazareth. So it's nothing new, this idea of growing in groups, but it might be new to you. So let me just be clear about what a CCB group is. It's not a Bible study. It's a group of people, usually about 10 to 16, could be more, could be less, but usually about 10 to 16 people that gather weekly. Could be more often, could be less often, but it's a group that gathers regularly. Not to know more of the Bible, but to apply the Bible more. So we have these significant conversations. And we give you the resources that you need to have a conversation about the weekend service, or if you want to have a different study or different conversation, you can. It's flexibility in the groups. But the purpose is to have conversations that matter. But it's more than conversations that matter. It's fellowship and fun. We eat together. We play together. We serve in the community together. We do life together. Why? Because when you get together, you get it together better. Now, we're not saying that anyone in any group has got it all together. We're simply saying that life is tough, and when you do it with me rather than we, it is way tougher. So we are orchestrating groups all across the city, all across the state. Now, you know we're aggressive at planting campuses. We want a campus within 20-minute drive of everywhere in our where people are going to meet for CCB. Because we want you to be able to invite a friend to their future campus and have them drive not more than 20 minutes. That's our strategy. But we're actually even more aggressive with groups. We don't want a group in every zip code. We want a group in every neighborhood, in every community. Because we know there's no way to disciple all the people that are coming to Christ without groups. This year, so far, this year, we have baptized over 7,000 people. Who's going to disciple 7,000 people? If we ask Ashley to disciple 7,000 people, and we said, okay, this is all you're not going to preach, you're not going to teach, you're not going to lead, we just want you to disciple 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. Do you know how much time he could spend with each person? Not each person who attends, just the people who are baptized. He would give them 26 seconds a week. That's not going to cut it. Add in the campus pastors, not going to cut it. Add in the associate pastors, not going to cut it. That's why we depend on groups to disciple believers. Our mission at CCV is to win people to Christ. We're doing that. Good job. And to train disciples. That's going to happen in groups. And then send disciples to impact the world. Guess what? That happens in groups as well. We need groups to accomplish our mission. And so we're encouraging groups all over to expand, for everyone to get involved in a group. It's a proven technique. I know you think, well, I'm not a professional. How could I disciple someone? I'm not asking you to disciple someone. I'm asking your group to disciple someone. Because you would need a stellar individual to disciple another. But an average group will trump a stellar person every day of the week. So we don't ask an individual to disciple groups. We ask a group to disciple individuals. And we know it works because a recent study compared Christian men, some of that were in groups, some that were not in groups, and they measured their spiritual maturity. Men who are in groups measure 182% on the spiritual maturity scale over those that are not. So if your goal is to get better at life, to grow as a disciple of Jesus, groups are the best option for you to go further, faster. Now, I know some of you, like, you don't like groups, and you know what? Let's be honest. I'm a loner too. Like, that whole Lone Ranger thing, I'm into that. But I know that I can't be my best self if it's me rather than a we. Brianna discovered that as well. Brianna is a young professional at the Central Scottsdale campus. Sharp young woman. But she came from a family that was, in some ways, verbally abusive and non-Christian. And when she came to Christ, blow up. Who's going to be her family now if her family is opposed to her coming to Christ? Her group was her family, and her group was her strength, and her group was her encouragement. And when she lost her job, it was the group that kept encouraging her. It was the group that kept giving her leads for jobs. And when she did get hired, it was at the company of someone else in the group. We need each other. And you may not need a group today, but you will need a group someday. And today, somebody needs you in their group. This is not simply for us. Groups actually are for the community. Did you know that Christians who are in groups are twice as likely as their non-church neighbors to volunteer for civic organizations and social causes? It doesn't just make us better, it makes our city better, it makes our state better. So I want to take a look at this and simply ask the question, when you get knocked down, who's going to stand up for you? If you got in an accident today and couldn't shop for yourself, who would shop for you? If you got in trouble and you couldn't care for your kids, who would care for your kids while you were taking care of this issue you had? If you went into the hospital, who would come and pray with you? When you get knocked down, who is going to stand up for you? That's an important question because all of us get knocked down at some point in our lives. And I want to take a look at this idea. Right, the whole sermon in a single sentence is simply this. We've already heard it. When you get it together better. And I want to look at that through the lens of King David. He was the greatest king of Israel's history. You probably remember his story. When he was a boy, he killed a giant named Goliath. This huge, giant, little boy, slingshot, he goes down. The king was so impressed with young David that invited him to live in the palace. Is that where David found his people, in the palace? No. Actually, palaces can be very isolating. Some of you live in a practical palace, and you realize that's not the solution to happiness in life. In fact, in the palace, David was in danger by the king who invited him there. Not once, not twice, multiple times, Saul tried to kill David. Once he's sitting at dinner, just pulled up a spear and tried to pin David to a wall. He got jealous of David's popularity. So where do you find your people? David had to run out of the palace. You know where he ran? To Gath. Gath is a city in the Gaza Strip where Goliath came from. Now look, when you have to seek refuge in the hometown of an enemy's hero that you killed, you in trouble. And he wasn't comfortable there for long. I'm going to read to you where David found his people. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their commander. About 400 men were with him. Now, look at these people in this cave. They were in distress. They were in debt. They were discontented. These are tax evaders, scumbags, scallywags, yahoos, vagabonds. These are not the kind of people that you would necessarily like to be like. And yet, at the end of David's life, these yahoos became heroes. How does that happen? Because it's not the talent that you have that matters. It's the group that you're part of that makes the difference. And at the end of David's life, they're not called tax evaders or scallywags. They're called, the title, David's Mighty Men. I want to give you a few snippets of this group of men that David hung around and see the transformation from these malcontents to these basically the Mossad of the ancient Jewish army. One of the guys' names was Eliezer. Eliezer was one of David's right-hand guys. And when you go into battle, you want Eliezer by your side. This dude is tough. And one day they're out in this battle. There's Philistines on the other hill. In the ancient world, they would get one army on one hill and one army on the other hill, and they would shout insults back and forth until somebody got mad enough to run down into the valley. David and Eliezer are already in the valley. And some of their men are behind them, kind of being the rear guard. And they're shouting taunts and insults at the Philistines. Philistines finally had enough, and they said, all right, we're coming. And they start to come. And then more came. And then more came. And the soldiers behind David and Eliezer, David can't see him back there, they start backing up. Like, whoa, David, psst. There's a lot of those guys, and they're big. David doesn't know that they're retreating. And finally, the Philistines yell charge. David yells charge, looks behind him, and they're like, hey, hey, Eliezer, you, me, let's go. Back to back, they fought. These guys is basically a Jewish John Wick. They were unbelievable warriors. Listen to how it describes Eliezer. Eliezer stood his ground and struck down the Philistines till his hand grew tired and froze to the sword. The Lord brought about a great victory that day. The troops returned to Eliezer, but only to strip the dead. You can just see it. David and Eliezer, they're going after, wah, wah, wah. Finally, the last guy goes down, yeah. And David taps Eliezer on the shoulder, wah. Power down, dude, it's okay, it's just me. We're done. You can drop your sword. And he goes, I don't think I can. They had to peel his fingers off the sword. And then come the other soldiers over the hill, but only to strip the dead. Is that what you want to be written about you? That you weren't in the arena, but you came down to strip the dead. Look, you can be saved on the sideline, but only to strip the dead. You could be in the box seats, enjoying the game. But on Judgment Day, when he comes back, the reward is for those who are in the game. You can still be saved, but the crown is for those with blood on their hands, dirt on their knees, sweat on their brow. That's where I want to be, in the arena fighting for my king. Eliezer, what a guy. Around him were three other guys in the cave of Adullam. And one day, David's feeling sorry for himself. You probably would too. He's trapped in a cave. King hates him. King, like his own king is trying to kill him, and the enemies are trying to kill their king. This is a mess. And David opines, oh, if I could just have a drink of water from the well of Bethlehem. This is hometown. Hometown water just is sweet. It's cool. It's refreshing. And these three guys overhear what David said and said, hey, did you hear what the king said? King wants water from the well of Bethlehem. And what the king wants, the king is going to get. Let's go. Problem was 13 miles away. Bigger problem, there's a garrison of Philistine warriors in between them and Bethlehem. They don't care. With a sword in one hand and a flask in the other hand, they fight their way through the Philistines, fill the flask up with water, fight their way back, and they present it to the king. You know what David did with the flask? You won't believe this. You might not even like it. King takes the flask. And he pours the water out on the ground. Why would he demean their sacrifice? He wasn't demeaning it. He was exalting it. Because this was a sacrifice, not for a king, but for a God. Are you that deliberate about your discipleship? Because that doesn't happen when you're alone. Eliezer needs a cave, a band of merry men who will fight with him. These three guys, they did it as a team, as a group. You don't get to be the man or woman of God that you want to be if it's just me. It's a we. Can I tell you one more story? Like, this is my favorite one of all. This guy, he's got to be a little bit nuts. Just fair warning. His name is Benaniah. Benaniah, he just got a little crazy in him. And one day it says he also went down into a pit on a snowy day and killed a lion. Son, it's a snowy day. It's slippery down in the pit, and the lion's in the pit. You don't need to jump down to the pit to kill the lion. You just take a spear and kill the lion. I get it. You want a lion skin coat. Who doesn't? But you don't have to jump into the pit. I haven't talked to Benaiah about this, so I'm not positive what he's thinking, but I think what he's thinking is that if I'm up here with a club and you're down in the pit, that's not a fair fight. I at least want to give the lion a fair fight. So he goes, "Here, kitty, kitty." You got to love a guy like that. It's just a little bit nuts for God. And he didn't just kill a lion. David was a giant killer. Benaiah was as well. In the very next verse, it describes Benaiah, who is a Jew. And just to set the stage here, according to archaeological records, the average Jewish male at that time was about 5'6". He's small. This giant was 7.5 feet tall. Like, he's an NBA player. And so Benaiah goes after him. Here's how the Bible describes it. Once armed only with a club, he killed an Egyptian warrior who was 7'6" and who was armed with a spear as thick as a weaver's beam. Benaiah wrenched the spear from the Egyptian's hand and killed him with it. He's got a club. Starts at the guy's knees and works his way up, gets the spear and kills him. This guy is amazing, but there's no Benaiah if he's not in the cave of Adullam. How do you get to be a mighty warrior of God? I was curious about this whole scene with Benaiah. Like, what would it look like for a 5'6" guy to fight an Egyptian giant? So I went to AI. I asked it to produce a picture of a 5'6" Jewish man in the ancient world fighting a 7.5-foot Egyptian giant, and this is what it rendered. Who are you putting your money on? I'm not going for the giant. I would put my money on Benaiah every day of the week, because I don't bet on guys who are big. I don't bet on talent. I bet on teams. And I know what team this cat's on. And he has the heart in him, not just his own heart. He has the heart of the mighty men of David. And so, this is how it works. When we get together, we get it together better. I know some of you, like, you're convinced, okay, I know I need to be in a group, but I don't like groups. Look, I get you, I see you, I hear you. But without a group, you cannot reach your potential for the Lord. So where do you find your people? It's not in a palace, it's in a cave. So here are some rules for cave dwelling. Rule number one, circles are better than rows. Rows are inspiring. Like what we do on the weekend, it's inspiring. But transformation takes place when you're eyeball to eyeball in a circle. And some groups meet in living rooms, some groups meet at businesses, some meet at parks, some meet in schools. There's even one group in the East Valley. They met in the middle of a lake on paddle boards, which is really smart if you think about it, because if someone wants to get baptized, you're right there. A group can take any shape and any form, but this is where we get our best selves, is when we get together with people who help us get it together. Here's rule number two. Sometimes you need the group, and sometimes the group needs you. There are people all over our campuses who need help, and we get calls saying, "Can you please help us? We're desperate." 99% of the calls we get, when people are at their wits' end, they're at the bottom, 99% of those calls are from people who are not in a group. Because if you're in a group, 99% of the time is the group that helps you when you need help, and you help the group when someone else needs help. That was the story of Amber and Tony from our North Surprise campus. It was a young couple, and they had just joined the group, new to the church, new to the group, and they found out they were pregnant, first child, freak out mode. If you've had a first child, you get it. It's like, what do I do? Where do I go? The group rallied around them and helped answer their primary questions about, like, what to expect and what's coming. And the cool thing about their story is there's nothing miraculous about it. There's nothing, like, extraordinary about it. Amber said, when I needed a cup of milk, so I was in a recipe and I needed a cup of milk. Who'd I go to? The group. She was ironing one night and the iron broke. So she needed someone to loan her iron. Where'd she go? To the group. They went on a day trip out of town, and they were delayed getting back, so the dog needed to be let out. Who'd they go to? The group. It's doing life together is what makes the group so powerful. But their story also includes joblessness. 2 months into Amber's pregnancy, he lost his job. And he was the primary breadwinner, so that's terrifying. That was a journey that would last for 13 months. Well, as you can do the math, that's after the baby's born. He doesn't need to ask for paternity leave. He doesn't have a job. He needs a job, and it was the group that walked with them through it. Here's another interesting thing about their story. That was actually their second group that they were in at CCB. And they're not in that group anymore. They're in a third group, which leads me to the third rule of cave dwelling, that not every group is for everyone. And not every group, and no group is for all time. Listen, if you're part of a group and it's not working, it's okay. Find a different group. That's normal. That's natural. We all go through those seasons. Some groups last for a year. Some groups last longer. But there is a group near you and for you. We have groups that are for men, groups that are for women, groups that are for singles, groups that are pickleball groups. We have, yes, that's a thing. We have groups for special needs. We have group for special interests. There is a group near you and for you, and if there's not, then why don't you create it? I remember Alex coming to me at our surprise campus. They had 2 special needs children, and he said, is there a special needs group? Because special needs families, the stress is astronomical, and the divorce rate is high. They need a group. And I said, actually, I don't know. I don't think there is. And we found out there wasn't one. So I said, Alex, why don't you start it? He started one group on the surprise campus, and they have spread to virtually all of our campuses now. If you have a need, someone else has that need. Like I say, not every group is for everyone, and no group is for all time. But there is a group, and a group may need you, whether you need the group or not. So I know some of you are still unconvinced, and I get it. You're just saying, I know you're right. I should be part of a group. I need community, be healthy physically, mentally, but I'm just not going to do it. Okay, so let me help you out. I'm going to give you some excuses that will help you get out of a group. Because you came with someone, now they're putting pressure on it. See, the pastor says, so let me help you. Here's an excuse you might try. I don't know enough about the Bible. Or a variant of this is, I'm not comfortable praying in public. Wait a minute, though. There actually is no Bible entrance exam for a group. And nobody's actually going to make you pray if you're not comfortable praying in public. So that's a bad excuse. Oh, here's one. I don't know what to expect. That's the thing. Some people, surprises just don't go well, and you've got anxiety, so you need to know what to expect. If you don't know what to expect, it could go badly. So there. Except that on every campus this week, there's going to be a groups preview event where you can kind of speed date different groups. You'll be able to meet different group leaders and make a decision if this group is for me. It's a great idea, and it'll tell you exactly what to expect. And we are so determined to help you find a group that we are ponying up, that your church is paying for childcare and your meal. So that's a bad excuse. So yeah, don't use that one. Oh, here's one. I don't have enough time. Really? How much time do you have? Like today, how many hours? 24? Me too. Like every day, 24 hours. The time is the only thing you have. It is an unlimited resource. It's just, you get more time and more time and more time until you run out of time, and then we don't want you joining a group. And you might say, well, I don't know, I'm so busy. I don't think I can go to the group preview. I don't think I have the time. Listen, if you don't want to go to the group preview, then why don't you see if you can get on jury duty this week? Or schedule a colonoscopy. Either way, that might be a valid excuse not to go. Look, we all have time. So just be honest with yourself and say, it's not about time, it is about priority. And you might feel like you don't need a group right now. But Alex and Paige are sure glad that they have a group right now. This unfolded just last week. Alex and Paige have been married for a year, and they've been at the church for about a year. They're at our Chandler campus. Beautiful couple. They went to Wisconsin to go visit family, and Alex got very, very sick. We went to the doctor, and they gave him the worst possible news. This is a young couple. She just found out she's pregnant, 2 months pregnant, and he just found out he has stage 4 cancer. They won't let him get back on a plane. They have him in the hospital. They're giving him the chemotherapy right now as we speak, and we're going to pray for him in just a minute. But what you need to know is before they ever get home, their group is already working at their home on their behalf. You don't know when you're going to need a group, but you do know that a group needs you. That's why in the Bible, the writer of Hebrews says, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. The day is approaching, and it's time for you to engage in a group, because when you get together, you get it together better. I know you have an excuse, but I also know that you have a reason. And the reason is for you to be the kind of Christian that legends are written about, for you to become an Eliezer, for you to become a Benaiah, for you to become a group of three that will fight against all odds for the glory of your king. So I'm just asking you. Now, I'm going to pray, and I'm going to ask for you to give undivided attention to the host of your campus, who will tell you exactly how to get engaged with the preview event on your campus. Holy Father, thank you for creating us in your image as a community. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, help us to be in community with one another for your glory, so that as we live the way you intended, the way you created us to live, that we would fully live for your glory. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. Let's go make Jesus famous.